Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at Stewart-Peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for May 22, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Ben Pruse of the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. In agricultural news, the full Senate will debate whether to give the President fast-track trade promotion authority. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason looks at the impact of Central Illinois cash rent on the 2015 corn crop. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's see how futures are trading on this Friday afternoon. The settlement's here now. Hard red winter July wheat settled at 546 and a half, down 11 and one quarter. September, 557, down 10 and three quarters. Soft July wheat settled at 515 and a quarter, down 6 and three quarters. September, 523, down 6 and a half. July corn settled at 360, down 5. September at 366 and three quarters, down 4 and three quarters. December at 377 and three quarters, down 4 and a half. July beans settling at 924 and a quarter, down 14 and a quarter. September, 907 and a half, down 12 and three quarters. November, 907, down 11 and one half. July soybean meal settling at 304.20, up 10 cents. July soybean oil settling at 31.64, down 61. And now some last trades. June live cattle, 152.22 and a half, down 15. August feeders, 218.90, up 117 and a half. And June lean hogs are 83.85, and they are up 7 and one half. And those are settlements and last trades from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at meteorologist Drew Linner's weather highlights, he says the U.S. hard red winter wheat country will continue to get too much rain in the next week along with the western corn belt. Lower U.S. Midwest wheat conditions may also deteriorate next week with too much moisture and warm conditions, possibly promoting quality declines. U.S. Midwest corn and soybean areas will experience mostly good conditions, but portions of the western corn belt will be too wet over the next 10 days, and some areas in the east may also become too wet for a little while next week. Temperatures in the U.S. plains and Midwest will stay cool for another day or two, but much improved conditions are likely this weekend and next week as well, with a more seasonable temperature range. U.S. southeastern states will experience a good mix of rain and sunshine during the next 2 weeks, and U.S. Delta weather will be favorably mixed with rain and sunshine over the next 2 weeks. Canada's prairies need rain. Dry weather has been prevailing in some of central and southern Alberta locations and across portions of western Saskatchewan for an extended period of time. Rainfall, though, is not likely for the next 10 days in most areas, while temperatures will be trending warmer. Damage from Monday morning's cold weather is still being assessed in Canada's prairies, but more planting likely will be necessary. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Atchison, Kansas. Well, I'll get that right yet before I retire. Good afternoon, Mike.
Dave, good afternoon. A happy Memorial Day, and a big thank you from me and my family to the veterans listening. It's a very special weekend.
Absolutely is, Mike, and a hearty thank you from me as well. Let's begin with the cattle on feed report. We got new numbers out today. And placed on feed during April, 95%. Fed cattle marketed at 92. On feed 1 May, 101. Those numbers not quite as stout as the trade estimates were, and probably part of the reason that we're seeing the Fed cattle up this afternoon?
Yeah, and the feeders were really the outlier in the commodity complex this afternoon, and I think it goes directly to the placements numbers being a strong 5% below what the average trade guessed. And I think the incentive just wasn't there for the placements, Dave. Not only do we still have the lead month futures about $8 off their January highs, but there is so much better wheat, hay, and grass pasture in this part of the country than there has been the last couple years. It didn't surprise me that the placements were not as big as the trade was expecting. I think June could see a substantially larger number, and I think with bigger weights, I think the feeders that go into the lots in June could be some extremely big weights compared to the last 5 years. I went down the three biggest states for placements, Kansas, 97% of a year ago, Nebraska, 93%, Texas, 92%. These three states make up over half of the actual placements. So I think this is where it makes sense. We've got a lot of water out here for a change, and we're feeding them on the grass, and we're feeding them on the pasture.
Let's turn our attention to the grains, and as I read lots of red on the screen, I suppose we don't have to go very much further than the rally that we're seeing in the U.S. dollar coming off its low at 93.26 and is at 96.18 today.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think to encapsulate this week's trade and especially today's trade, and unlike the Federal Reserve minutes on Wednesday, the dollar bulls got fed by no one less than Chairwoman Yellen of the Fed, and she was talking to the Providence Chamber of Commerce in Providence, Rhode Island today and said, quote, "I think it will be appropriate at some point this year to take the initial step to raise the rates target and begin the process of normalizing monetary policy," unquote. I think the Fed in the market's mindset is now back to a strong dollar policy through an interest rate hike, and I think they really saw that mid-session, and the trade saw that mid-session in the grains with the, and for the, that part, most of the livestock commodities, the metals, the energies, most of them were sharply lower, if not somewhat lower, except, as I said, the feeders.
And with that dollar rallying sharply, it's really put some technicals into play, especially in the soybeans, it seems.
Yeah, it really has. And that we talked about this morning. You were asking about the downside and new lows in beans. And I said my biggest fear is that it's going to come as a result of the meal market taking out 302. Well, we didn't take out 302. We actually saw the meal stand in there pretty nicely on some bean oil, bean meal spread unwinding. But we still saw the new lows in the soybean complex. So I don't think the new lows in the soybeans will have follow-through when we come back from the holiday, unless the meal joins up with it. So I'm looking at it from a little bit more medium-term perspective as opposed to a short-term perspective of just today's trade. I really think if you're going to take more new, take more lows out and seek some areas that we haven't seen in over a year to 2 years in the soybeans, I think you got to have meal participating. But the biggest disappointment, as we talked about this morning as well, was the wheat. Kansas City wheat only up 4 cents on the week. The biggest loser in the grain complex today in percentage terms, and it closed back below its 100-day moving average. And this, even though we're staring in the face some substantial rainfall amounts. I did reach out to Kansas State Extension this morning to find out if they were talking about anything down south, but hadn't heard back from them since we went on the air here this afternoon.
I did take a look at a continuous November chart going all the way back to 2010, and it seems to me that we do have a head and shoulders top in the chart, and we pretty much hit the downside objective of breaking the neckline way back there in 2014, which was right around 909, 910, 912. So we're right there. And I would think that that $9 level is probably pretty psychological. We probably don't want to go below that unless the market and you're either a bear but if you're bull, you don't want to go below that because you're probably looking at 850.
No, I think that's right, and I think this is where anytime you lose a big number like the 9 handle in beans or the 5 handle in corn, you start to see traders ramp up on their shorts, and that's where the momentum comes into play with today's quant funds and their algorithmic trading. I think this goes back to the beans being down in November, mm-hmm. almost 27 cents on the week, whereas the corn was only down just under a nickel. You've got the bean-corn ratio now at a situation where if the beans want to go lower, then the corn is probably going to follow it, especially if it doesn't have the wheat underneath it. And I say that knowing that in the past week, and I had about 3 to 5 calls this afternoon between our morning segment, Dave, and our afternoon segment, from producers in Illinois and western Indiana telling me, and I think they wanted me to pass this on the air, telling me their crop stands are going down in corn. Their potential record yields are going down at this point, and the next 10 days are going to be real important to the corn crop. So I think while we can talk negativity in the beans, and rightfully so in case acres of beans get planted more, at the expense of corn, I think there is a point where the corn will not want to go too much lower until it knows more about the crop. But I would say, like I told my clients this week, right now it's wheat's turn to have a rally on the weather. Give it 10 to 15, maybe 20 days before the corn wants to do the same.
Thank you much, Mike.
Have a nice holiday, Dave.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In agricultural news, the Senate voted 62-38 yesterday to invoke cloture and begin debate on a bill to grant the president trade promotion authority. The motion that passed will allow consideration of an amendment to extend the charter of the Export-Import Bank. The motion allows for 30 hours of debate, but after the vote yesterday, senators gathered in small groups, both on and off the Senate floor, in what appeared to be an attempt to come to agreements to limit the number of amendments and speed up the process. Egg prices have surged higher as the death of millions of hens from bird flu is beginning to tighten supplies. The Midwest price of a dozen large eggs has risen to $1.88. That's 58% higher than they were a month ago. Prices have begun climbing at a rate of about 5% a day for the past week as supplies become tighter. Eggs used primarily as an ingredient in ice cream, mayonnaise, and other products are up even more, about 162% to $1.65 a dozen since April 22nd. Deere & Company says its profit dropped 30% in the latest quarter, blaming weak conditions in the global farm economy. For the quarter ending April 30th, the company reported a profit of $690.5 million, down from a year earlier profit of $980.7 million. Falling crop prices, weakening overseas sales, and the curtailment of U.S. tax incentives have dampened demand for farm equipment. Deere & Company says it expects equipment sales to decline about 19% this year and 17% in the current quarter. Walmart, the nation's largest food retailer, is urging its thousands of U.S. suppliers to curb the use of antibiotics in farm animals and improve treatment of them. The food retailer is asking meat producers, egg suppliers, and others to use antibiotics only for disease prevention or treatment and not to fatten their animals, a common industry practice. Walmart wants suppliers to provide the company with an annual report on their progress. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, Todd Gleason talks with University of Illinois ag economist Gary Schnicke about cash rents. As it stands today, farmers on highly productive land in central Illinois are likely to lose about $70 for every cash rented acre planted to corn.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnicke, ag economist from the U of I, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, joins us to take up his latest writing for that website. It's about cash rents. He suggests they need to come down by at least $70 for this marketing year. Of course, that won't come, but 2016 may be a good time to renegotiate.
We probably haven't seen large cash rent decreases, but to give you a feel for this, and this is central Illinois farmland, high productivity, right now the average cash rent would be in the 290s, and if we're at a 375 corn price, we would have operator and land returns in the 220s. So cash rents would have to come down $60 to $70 to match that $375 price. Given normal yields, farmers would be losing $60 to $70 at a average cash rent.
And that's going to happen for this year if we have a normal yield.
Normal yield, $375 price, we will be looking at losses on cash rent situations. If we do manage to get in the fours in normal yields, we would have less of a loss, but you know, at $425 corn price, we would still be looking at $30 of loss. So we've seen cash rents increase and probably in response to a $5 price, and now we got to get them coming back down to match the prices that we're currently seeing.
I know you go back and you pull the data and you look at it and you analyze it. What numbers support these kinds of conclusions on your part?
Well, we look at non-line cost from FBFM farms, and we look at those. Actually, we go back into the 1990s up to the current, see where they're at, and then we project forward and also do projections of yields based on trend line average yields, and we look at the prices that are currently being offered by the market. At this current time, you would be lucky to get cash grain bids in for $375. If you're a bit more optimistic, $375, maybe we'll get to $4 with normal yields. And obviously, if we have higher yields, we'll have lower prices probably, and vice versa.
Do you know if or how far the data set deviates from the whole of the aggregate cash rent in the state of Illinois?
So if we look at this across different land productivities at a $375 price, it's a $60 to $70 loss at a $375 price across the state at average cash rent levels. So, and we looked at it northern Illinois, central Illinois, and southern Illinois, and it is pretty consistent, that $60 to $70 loss given a $375 price and the average rents in those regions.
And is there a difference, do you suppose, in the FBFM records as opposed to the whole of the state, if you were able to look at everybody in the state?
As far as cash rents?
Right.
As far as cash rents, no. Those cash rents that we're seeing from FBFM matches the other average sources. Having said that, you know, you can find cash rents within a county that are $100 higher and $100 lower than those averages. So there's considerable variability in cash rents for same county for the same productivity of land. So there's just a large variability.
If you take the data and split it up, FBFM data that is, and split it up into different categories so that you would have cash renters at more than 50% of the acreage or more than 80% of the acreage or some other sort of split that makes sense? Does it change?
So typically what we see, well, most commercial farms in this state, and that would be something over 1,500 acres, have an average of 80% of the land rented. So most of the land on 1,000, 1,500 acre farms and higher is cash rented. When we get at really high cash rent levels in larger farms, we typically see higher cash rents on those farms than you know, if we're looking at farms with 5% of their land owned and the rest cash rented, they typically have had higher cash rent levels than the 20-80 split.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's University of Illinois ag economist Gary Schnitke. You can read his thoughts on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Ben Prues of the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. Good afternoon, Ben.
Afternoon, Dave.
Is basis along the river standing in good?
No, we basis actually, as a matter of fact, today is just falling out of bed.
Mm.
Guys are just saying, you know what? I'm just throwing in the towel, selling the corn and just managing it appropriately. But you know, maybe 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, we were trading option basis delivered to the end users, and there may be at best 10 under today.
All right. What about the soybean side?
Soybean side, we were a little bit concerned because we're right here in the heart of all that chicken, avian flu, and we're a little bit concerned that that was going to kind of puke basis, but, you know, they've actually stayed in there. You know, we've seen crush margins continue to just stay firm, and so they're staying in there for the time being, and we haven't seen quite the dramatic change that we were kind of expecting.
Where are producers on new crop sales in your area?
At best, corn and beans, basically, I'll put it like this, corn basically somewhere between 10 and 20% sold, and beans somewhere about the same, probably 10 to 15% on beans, and, you know, we're just having to, you know, we're going back to the fundamental, just putting the boots on the ground, putting on hedges, rolling, capture and carry. I mean, it just feels like that's where we're headed, and so guys are having to sharpen their pencil again these days.
It feels like an old-time marketplace.
Yes, it does. Well, since I've been in agriculture, it's always been a demand-driven market. Now we're shifting back to that supply-driven market. We're going to need to polish off those grain bins, you know, put it in the bin, capture the carries, and wait for basis appreciation.
Do you think that if you look at the futures board, the July NOV spread in beans, you think that's going to narrow in weeks ahead?
It's kind of hard to tell, to be honest with you. I really think it's, it's interesting. You look at the estimates as far as carryouts, you know, if there's a north of a 300 million bushel carryout, I mean, boy, it sure feels like there should be a carry in the bean market, but obviously that's not the case here today.
Mm-hmm.
Those spreads, I mean, it's really hard to really put your foot down and say, this is what I think it's going to do, simply from the standpoint of, being up, up 12 one day, down 14 here today. I mean, it's truly hard to, basically we're encouraging people, if you're managing your spreads or cash prices, whatever it is, have targets in mind. And when it gets there, execute on it and just get out of the volatility.
All right. We thank you very much. What about your prices today?
We're 340 cash corn and 884 cash beans.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep.
Ben Prues of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. It's National Vanilla Pudding Day. The dessert Americans think of today is more related to custards than puddings. Early English puddings were either savory and meat-based or sweet with a base of flour, eggs, and sugar. By the 1930s, instant custard and pudding mixes were all the rage in the U.S. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was born. Doyle was the creator of that famed detective Sherlock Holmes. A close reading of The Valley of Fear shows Holmes was keenly interested in farming in his later years. Directly from the story, the friends of Mr. Sherlock Holmes will be glad to learn that he is still alive and well, though somewhat crippled by occasional attacks of rheumatism. He has, for many years, lived in a small farm upon the downs 5 miles from Eastbourne, where his time is divided between philosophy and agriculture. In 1931, canned rattlesnake went on sale for the first time, packed by George K. End of Arcadia, Florida. By the way, End's demise came at the fangs of a rattler. End refused to go to the hospital and instead treated the wound with a home remedy that he devised. The cure failed. In 1934, David Wesson died. An American chemist, he developed a method to make cottonseed oil edible. Cottonseed oil has almost no taste, so it allows the flavors of other foods to come through. It is used in the manufacture of margarine, salad dressings, and commercially fried foods, and of course, Wesson oil. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Most of the Midwest is still rather quiet this morning, with no precipitation occurring except in Missouri and Iowa. But this will likely change as we move out over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, with a little bit more frequent precipitation pattern anticipated. Most of the coldest conditions occurred in the areas that are traditionally coldest and therefore probably did not have a huge impact. The rain in the western part of the Corn Belt is certainly going to be of greatest interest for a while, because it's not just the only wave of precipitation that will impact the region. In fact, most of the central and southwestern plains will be plagued by rain from tomorrow all the way through Monday of next week, as one wave after another of rain moves across hard red winter wheat country and into the western Corn Belt. Many areas in the central and southwest plains will see 1 to 3 inches of rain and local totals to 4 and 5 inches. That's on top of rainfall that was already pushing up to 4 inches yesterday in north central parts of Texas and south central and southwestern Oklahoma. For the Midwest, the rains won't be quite so intensive, but parts of Kansas and Missouri, as well as Iowa and Nebraska, will see enough frequency in their precipitation that there will continue to be some delay in farming activity and late season planting, as well as some concern over the quality of crops or condition of crops in low-lying areas will continue to be an issue. In the eastern and central parts of the Midwest, the situation will be less disruptive because the rains are going to be a lot lighter as they reach across the Mississippi River. That will likely be the case for most of the next 5 days, but as we get out into the week next week, we'll likely encounter a higher frequency of precipitation in the eastern Midwest and probably encounter greater volumes of rain as well. Today's computer forecast model data is a little bit wetter for some of that region. In general, we're going to see enough precipitation next week to see a slowdown in farming activity. Hopefully by then, a lot of the fieldwork will already be wrapping up. For the Delta and the southeastern states, a similar situation will occur, with somewhat erratic rainfall and warm weather likely in this first 5 to 7 days of the forecast, and then a little bit more frequent precipitation thereafter. The northern U.S. plains, where all the cold air has been the past 2 mornings, will likely see some improving tendencies as we get out over the next few days with drier weather and also warmer temperatures. But some of the computer forecast model data suggests that perhaps we aren't done with the cold surges. Sometime in the latter days of May, we could see yet another surge of cold impacting the eastern parts of the Canada prairies and a portion of the uppermost Midwest and northern plains. That's a long ways out in the forecast. Till we get there, our temperatures in the Midwest will be rebounding somewhat as we move forward through these next few days, but it's going to be very chilly across the area for the next two. Highs tomorrow will be 60s and lower 70s. Our lowest temperatures at night will likely stay above freezing in most areas, but upper 30s and 40s in the north and 40s and lower 50s in the south. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's closing market report. Remember, the markets are closed on Monday. This is Dave Dickey.
So Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.